Hello, this is Bob Kruger from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Thought for Food for November 2011. The month of November has two important holidays. We observe Veterans Day on the 19th, and this year, Thanksgiving falls on the 24th. Daylight saving times ended on the 6th, and some local elections took place yesterday. The 8th. I want to apologize for all of the grouches in our midst. October 15th was National Grouches Day, and I failed to mention it. I'm reminded of driving through a small town and observing this sign. Welcome to Kettle Falls, the home of 1,214 happy people and one grouch. Raleigh's Solace Restaurant is now offering a permanent meat-free menu every Monday for vegans and vegetarians. This menu includes a vegetable lasagna, sweet coconut curry vegetables, barbecue kebabs, zucchini noodles, Cuban black beans, and stuffed poblano peppers. By request, the menu is available every day of the week at the Glenwood South Restaurant. For more information, you can call 755-0755. 755-0755. Wendy's has a gluten-free menu. Dunkin' Donuts offers kosher meals at dozens of their locations. Chipotle's Mexican Grill is letting customers know they use bacon in preparing its pinto beans. Americans are craving more information about the food they are served, and fast food companies are increasingly obliging, many going well beyond the legally mandated calorie counts. They're updating their signs and menus for diet-conscious customers, and they're also highlighting potential problems for those with food allergies or other dietary restrictions. Although responding to demand, quick-service restaurants are also seeing that providing the additional information can help them stand out in this highly competitive marketplace. If you can demonstrate to families that you can offer them a safe meal, you establish a tremendous sense of loyalty and create repeat customers, said Chris Weiss, a vice president at the nonprofit Food Allergy and Anaphylaxis Network. As we look to the future, we'll definitely see more restaurants doing this. California and New York City require large chains to disclose calorie counts for each meal, and similar federal rules are coming next year. Adding another layer of information is a natural progression, especially for restaurants eager to woo the growing number of customers who aren't eating beef burgers or can't eat food cooked in peanut oil. Non-meat eaters rose to 8% of American adults in 2009 from 6.7% in 2006, according to the latest figures from the nonprofit Vegetarian Resource Group. Food allergies increased 18% from 1997 to 2007, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Some diners now carry special cards listing which foods they must avoid. But following these instructions has been difficult at fast food restaurants and fast casual establishments where the ingredients are often a mystery. French fries, tortilla chips, and even cooked veggie burgers are sometimes cooked in lard or in the same vats of oil used to prepare meat items. Beef flavoring or animal-derived gelatin shows up on vegetarian side dishes and salads. It's rarely a case of intentional misinformation, said Jean Yokobau, the research director for the Vegetarian Resource Group. Should we expect restaurant staff to bend over backwards, she said? That's expecting a bit much. Diners have to go a little step further to find out for sure. Many customers, shaken by the recent disclosures about food preparation, are clamoring for more information, for more specific information on signs and menus. After non-pork eaters complained this summer, Chipotle started redesigning its menu boards to show that bacon is used in its pinto beans. Panda Express accused in the lawsuit of using chicken powder in meat-free entrees. Analysts say consumers over the next year will probably see a spurt in diet-sensitive menus as companies try to attract vegetarians and others with diet limitations. It's not that they're benevolent companies. It's that they feel they can increase traffic by giving out more detailed information, said Nick Setyan at Webbush Securities. It's a way to market themselves. Wendy's is positioning itself at the forefront of the trend. Besides offering a gluten-free menu, it has positioned itself at the forefront of the trend. Its posters list all ingredients and potential allergen, but it doesn't design meals for those with specific diets. We have to develop products for the mass audience, spokesman Denny Lynch said. Another plus for Wendy's is a new formulated French fry. In the beginning, they felt their French fries weren't as good as McDonald's, and they chose to do something about it. They went back to the kitchen, came out with a revamped fry made from russet potatoes with skin on for added flavor and texture, cooked in trans-fat-free oil and dusted with sea salt. Wendy says its new fries are so good that they beat McDonald's by a wide margin in a recent independent consumer taste test. The Consumer Reports people decided to test this claim. They had two sensory experts taste fries from those two restaurants and from Burger King, Five Guys, Fuddruckers, and KFC in the New York tri-state area. Their findings? Wendy's was right to brag, and we scored it very good. Our experts gave Wendy's a slight edge over McDonald's because its fries were a bit more potatoey. The others were close, too, except Burger King. Its fries tasted fatty, had less intense potato flavor, and rated only good. I've heard that Wendy's is experimenting with an improved hamburger. One has to keep improving in order to survive in the intensely competitive fast food market. Do you use reusable shopping bags when you go grocery shopping? If so, this may be of interest to you. Reusable grocery bags may be good for the environment, but they could be making you sick. A new study has found that intestinal bacteria like E. coli flourish in unwashed, usable bags. The study, published in the latest issue of International Association for Food Protection's Food Protection Trends magazine, tested 87 reusable bags obtained at random from shoppers in California and Arizona. Charles Gerba, a professor at the University of Arizona who conducted the studies, found that 8% contained E. coli, among other harmful pathogens. Putting a reusable bag through the wash can eliminate almost 100% of the bacteria, but the study found that only 3% of shoppers surveyed had washed a reusable bag between uses. I don't think that people always think of cleaning their bags, but it's like any other item. It's going to get soiled or dirty, said Montgomery County, Maryland Representative Bonnie Ayers. If you don't want to wash them, just wipe them out. But interviews with shoppers strolling through Maryland's grocery stores recently found that not everyone takes steps to decontaminate their reusable grocery bags. One lady said that even if she knew bacteria would be growing, she wouldn't wash her reusable bags. She only puts pre-wrapped items in her bag. Other precautions that can eliminate health risks, including packing raw meat separately from fruits and vegetables to avoid cross-contamination and not storing reusable bags in the trunk of the car where high temperatures increase bacteria growth. The bag study found that reusable bags contaminated with meat juice were left in a car trunk for 2 hours. The number of bacteria grew tenfold. Some shoppers say they separate meat from other groceries when using reusable grocery bags. I don't like my meat to touch my other stuff, one shopper said. She packs meat separately in plastic bags, and I find that often the checker will put my meat items in a separate plastic bag. Another shopper said that although she uses reusable bags, she doesn't keep them long. When I feel it's a little gross, I throw them out and buy a new. Instead of throwing them out, Natalie Slater, a spokeswoman for Reuse It, a company dedicated to selling reusable items, said shoppers should take the time to wash them out. Cleanliness is not an excuse for not using reusable bags. Simply throw your bags in the washing machine with your clothes. And I have a couple of those reusable grocery bags that are headed for the washing machine. This story is for all of us whose favorite dessert is some kind of pie. Of all the desserts I've tasted and enjoyed, some form of pie heads the list. It is hard not to love sweet potato pie, richer than pumpkin, not as cloying as pecan. It's a better delivery system for whipped cream than apple pie. So it pains us to suggest that we, the people of North Carolina, may have done a disservice to sweet potato pie. We're the nation's number one grower of sweet potatoes. Our sweet potato harvest brought in $176 million last year. Sweet potatoes are a replacement for that, she declares, and I think we should start a campaign. Truthfully, sweet potato pie is not a classic in North Carolina. It has a long history all over the South. It goes way, way back, said culinary historian and cookbook author Nancy McDermott of Chapel Hill. Both sweet potato and pumpkin are versions of custard pies. McDermott dug into the sweet potato genre in her 2010 book, Southern Pies. Although she won't name a favorite pie, it's like people talking about their kids. You can't name a favorite. She's partial to sweet potato. It's Southern, it's easy, and it's good, she says. Although people sometimes think sweet potatoes came from Africa with the slave trade, as did the peanut, they're actually native to America. The Cherokee Indians farm sweet potatoes. Sweet potatoes have been exported to Europe from an early date. They are mentioned in Shakespeare, and King Henry VIII ate them as an aphrodisiac. They didn't work any more than his marriages. Because sweet potatoes grow so well here, they turn up all over the state. Sonker, a cross between a pie and a cobbler that's a tradition in Surrey County, is often made with sweet potatoes, and fried pies have a sweet potato version called Jack's. People used to make pie out of anything they had on hand, McDermott has found recipes for pies made from soda crackers, bread crumbs, even Irish potatoes. Once people had access to more ingredients, those pies disappeared. The sweet potatoes stayed on, too good to be forgotten. At performances by the all-female band Sweet Potato Pie, they sell single-serving pies made by the Sweet Cheeks Bakery in Holly Springs. And they aren't the only state music connection. Chapel Hill native James Taylor wrote the song Sweet Potato Pie. The band's name, get them a bonus. They're the official band of the North Carolina Sweet Potato Commission and sing the commission's jingles at many performances. Now, about the state pie thing. It's not so far-fetched. Eight states have an official state pie. And while North Carolina grows a lot of blueberries and apples, those have been claimed by Maine and Vermont, respectively. But no state has a better claim to sweet potatoes than we do. Although sweet potatoes grow all over the state, the real concentration is along the I-95 corridor, particularly in Nash and Johnston counties. Johnston County is said to raise more sweet potatoes than any county in the country. Beside the heat and sandy soil, the other reason North Carolina grows so many is tobacco. Since both crops favor the same growing conditions, many tobacco farmers grew sweet potatoes too. It kept their farmhands busy all year and yielded an extra crop. When tobacco subsidies ended, some farms used the buyouts to enlarge their sweet potato operations. The sweet potato was already the official state vegetable. But John Kimber, the project director with the North Carolina Sweet Potato Commission, is game for pie. You're on to something, he says when we ask. It's a grand idea. What would it take to do it? State designations are often begin with school projects, says Gary Cohen, the director of bill drafting for the North Carolina General Assembly. Since anyone can file a bill, it's a good way for kids to experience the state legislature. Chapter 145 of the North Carolina statutes, entitled State Symbols and Other Official Adoptions, currently lists 32 official state things, including fruit, the scuppernong, berry red, the strawberry, berry blue, the blueberry, as well as a state beverage, milk, state dog, plot hound, and the state horse, the colonial Spanish Mustang. Although the statute lists 32 designations, there are actually 38 because of multiple choices. It is state government, after all. Cohen encourages anyone who would like to put it before the legislature. So is anyone opposed to the idea of sweet potato as a state pie? Everyone we asked was in favor. Even though Nancy McDermott won't name a favorite pie, she's willing to support sweet potato. That should be it, she declared. I'm completely on board. It's like barbecue, east or west. I don't care. I think they're both good. State pie, you bet. We could sure use some pie. This story was written by Kathleen Purvis, the food editor of the Charlotte Observer. Are you ready to get on the sweet potato bandwagon? We have a program on the reading service called Did You Know? And here are a couple of food items that could be entitled Do You Know? How old is the donut? Dutch immigrants from the Netherlands introduced olieballs, or oil balls, what we now call donuts, in the 1700s. Those deep-fried dollops of dough later became ring-shaped as a part of an effort to speed production time and to solve the soggy middle problem. In 1902, Dr. John H. Kellogg and his brother Will baked up the first batch of cornflakes in a sanitarium in Battle Creek, Michigan, a mecca for health enthusiasts who didn't eat meat and fretted about digestion. Kellogg was a pioneer in proclaiming grains as a healthy food. His growing business of mail-order cereal soon helped him and his more business-minded brother spread the words. Swimmer Mark Phelps' 8 gold medals in the Beijing Olympics were good news, but so was his standing breakfast order. Now get this. 3 fried egg sandwiches loaded with cheese, lettuce, tomatoes, fried onions, and mayonnaise, 2 cups of coffee, 1 5-egg omelet, 1 bowl of grits, 3 slices of French toast topped with sugar, and 3 chocolate chip pancakes. Phelps joked about his fuel intake on Saturday Night Live television program, saying you can eat whatever you like as long as it added up to 12,000 calories a day. I always knew swimming took a lot of energy. Baby boomers say their biggest health fear is cancer. Given their waistlines, heart disease and diabetes should be on that list also. Boomers are more obese than other generations, a new poll finds, setting them up for unhealthy senior years. And for all that talk, 60 is the new 50, and active aging, even those who aren't obese need to do more to stay fit, according to the Associated Press Live Goes Strong poll. Most baby boomers say they get some aerobic exercise, the kind that revs up your heart rate at least once a week, but most adults are supposed to get 2.5 hours of moderate intense aerobic activity, things like a brisk walk, a dance class, pushing a lawnmower. Only about a quarter of boomers polled report working up a sweat 4 or 5 times a week, what the average person needs to reach that goal. Worse, 37% never do any strength training, so crucial to fighting muscle loss that comes from aging. Walking is the most frequent form of exercise. That's good news. Walk enough and the benefits will add up. I have more energy and my knees don't bother me anymore, says Maggie Sanders, 61, of Abbeville, South Carolina. She had lost 15 pounds by walking 4 miles a week over the past 3 months and eating better. Based on calculation of body mass index from self-reported height and weight, roughly one-third of baby boomers polled are obese, compared with about a quarter of both older and younger responders. An additional 36% of boomers are overweight, though not obese. The post-war generation, born from 1946 to 1964, has been turning 65 and using Medicare. Obesity with its extra risk of heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, and arthritis will further fuel those bills. They're going to be expensive if they don't get their act together, says Jeff Levi of the nonprofit Trust for America's Health. He points to a study that found an obese senior costs Medicare 34% more than the average senior. About 60% of the boomers polled say they're dieting to lose weight and slightly more are eating more fruit and vegetables or cutting cholesterol and salt. But it takes physical activity, not just dieting, to shed pounds. Dieting alone could cost precious muscles in addition to fat, says Jack Rzeszewski of Wake Forest University, a specialist in exercise and aging. If you thought cable TV offered too many choices when it started displacing the big 3 broadcast, the newest Coca-Cola Freestyle soda machines probably aren't for you. The Freestyle machine is billed as the fountain of the future. A touchscreen, Wi-Fi enabled, tracking chip-equipped soda dispensing gizmo designed by the automaker Ferrari. It uses medication dosing technology to create some 125 Coke products, many of which, like Orange Coke and Vanilla Sprite Zero, aren't available in bottles anywhere. The machines are at most Southwest Grills locations in Raleigh and Durham, and B-Skis in Chapel Hill. Taco Mac has them at its South Park and University City locations in Charlotte. This is a really big innovation in the fountain business, says John Sicker, the publisher of the trade publication Beverage Digest. No one has anything comparable. Soda fountains and restaurants present about a quarter of the $74 billion U.S. soft drink market, Sicker said. Coca-Cola controls about 70% of the soda fountain business, but faces increased competition from convenience stores and other outlets that offer huge drink selections. Restaurant customers like McDonald's are interested in being more of a beverage destination than competing with convenience stores, Sicker said. The Freestyle machine lets them compete without installing a wall of coolers. Besides giving consumers a dizzying array of drink options, the machine provides restaurateurs and Coca-Cola with an unprecedented level of information. They offer statistics on exactly which drinks are being ordered and how much and when. The machines display that information to business owners and are transmitted to Coca-Cola's headquarters in Atlanta every day. Coca-Cola marketing manager Don Redler says the company could use that information to develop new products based on the machine's most popular drinks. Our brand team will be watching, Redler said. Bruce Scala, Taco Mac's vice president of marketing, said the data allows him to track what he's selling more closely and fine-tune offers for certain times. For example, Scala said he might notice which drinks sell best on nights when wings also sell strongly, a good menu pairing to push to customers. Data is king, Scala said. I even know how much water I'm selling now. The machines have been in development for 5 years, Redler said. They're available in 54 markets and are slowly rolling out to others as Coca-Cola trains maintenance personnel to service them. Manufactured by Coca-Cola at the company's Atlanta facilities, the machines are leased to restaurants. About 800 of the machines are in operation now, a minute fraction of the total number of soda fountains. Competitors are upgrading, too. PepsiCo recently debuted a social vending machine, a touchscreen-equipped machine that lets users connect with each other via cell phone while purchasing a soda. If you know a friend's cell phone number, you can buy them a Pepsi in the form of a redeemable coupon sent to their phone. The campaign to promote Freestyle is largely social media-based. About 32,000 people like the machine's Facebook pages and Twitter feeds. A smartphone app uses GPS technology to tell people who need a fix where the closest Freestyle machine is. What all of that high technology comes down to is potentially healthier bottom line for both Coca-Cola and the restaurants that use the new machines. I know I want to see one of these new gizmos in action. Do your baked potatoes always turn out as you would like? Alicia Ross and Beverly Mills, who write the column Desperate Dinners, share this information with us. Alicia writes, "For years, Beverly and I tried to figure out how to duplicate the potatoes at our favorite steakhouse. With the skin a little crunchy, the middle moist and fluffy. Real baked potatoes, we discovered, need to be cooked at 475 degrees Fahrenheit for an hour. Ever since discovering the high heat secret, I practically shout it from the rooftops. I see complete strangers shopping for baked potatoes at the grocery store and tell them, you know, for a steakhouse potato, you need to cook it unwrapped at 475 degrees. Oh, sure, I've got plenty of crazy looks. But last week, a lady came up to me at the grocery store and said, you told me how to cook my potatoes, and I went home and did exactly like you told me to. They're fantastic. You really ought to write a cookbook. I didn't mention I had co-authored 3 cookbooks, but I did tell her how glad I was that she liked the potatoes. Then I proceeded to buy a couple of potatoes for myself at home and bake them just like I told her to do. And here is Alicia's instruction. Use russet bacon potatoes weighing from 8 to 12 ounces. Preheat the oven to 475 degrees. Scrub the potato skins and prick each potato twice with a fork. Bake uncovered directly on the oven racks. No baking pan needed. For 1 hour, use oven mitts or long tongs. Carefully remove the potatoes from the oven. To serve immediately, slice the top open and with oven mitts, squeeze the potato like a coin purse to open it. Top with salsa, cheese, sour cream, or other toppings of your choice. If not eating now, let the potatoes rest until cool. If you don't serve them at once, place the potatoes in a zip top bag or covered container and refrigerate till ready to use, up to 3 days. Do not freeze. To rewarm, split the potatoes and heat for 3 to 4 minutes on high in the microwave. Top with the toppings of your choice and warm for another minute or two. I'm definitely going to try Alicia's recipe. Buyers beware. Eating as healthful as Uncle Sam suggests may end up costing hundreds of dollars extra per year, a new paper in the journal Health Affairs says. The study looked at what it would take to meet the federal dietary guidelines for 2010 for fiber, calcium, and other nutrients, limiting fat and sugar intake accordingly. Researchers from the University of Washington surveyed 2,001 residents of King County in Washington about their diet and nutrition. Almost across the board, eating more nutrient-dense foods rather than empty calorie junk foods came at a price. For every 1% of daily calories in the form of added sugar, the consumer saved $25-$55 a year. A little more of saturated fat cut the annual food bill by $102.20, raising the average respondent's poultry consumption of fiber just 10% would cost an additional extra $54.75 a year. Raising potassium intake an extra 10% would cost an extra $189.80. But don't exit the produce aisle yet. The authors say this may simply mean that consumers need to be educated not just how to eat better, but to eat smarter. Banana, for instance, is rich in both fiber and potassium, addressing two daily nutrient needs at once. That's particularly important, the researchers point out, because the conflict between good eating and cheap eating means poorer communities get hit the hardest. Dietary recommendations need to become more sensitive to the economic constraints faced by consumers, particularly those in the most vulnerable segments of society who face a disproportionate burden of obesity and chronic disease. I still have a problem making these findings true for an entire nation based on a mere 2001 interviews. A new Aldi store opened at 2900 Sunrise Valley Place off of Newbern Road in East Raleigh on November the 3rd. This is the German discount grocery chain's third store in Raleigh and a part of an expansion effort in the Triangle. The chain's first Durham store is scheduled to open this month at Interstate 40 and North Carolina Highway 751 in West Point at 751 Development. The chain previously announced plans to open a new store next year on Main Street in Wake Forest. There are also Aldi stores in Cary and Fuquay Marina. The local additions are part of a broader expansion effort by Aldi, the chain, which has more than 1,100 stores in 31 states, will have opened 80 new stores by the close of 2011. Aldi's U.S. headquarters are in Batavia, Illinois. The stores are smaller than most supermarkets and offer mostly Aldi private label products. Customers bring their own bags and pay 25 cents for a cart, which is refunded when you return it. Stores accept cash and debit cards, but no checks or credit cards. All this cuts down on operating costs, including the number of workers Aldi employs. If you are one who likes to bake a fruit cake, most grocery stores have the various kinds of candied fruit on display. As a rule, stores don't reorder items like this once they sell out. So that's it, no more. For those whose family expect homemade candy, so forth, many of your needed ingredients are now available. My only advice is don't wait too long. If you find a good price on a frozen turkey here at Thanksgiving time and want to serve turkey for Christmas, you may want to purchase two. That is, of course, if you have enough room in your freezer. And until next month, this has been Bob Krueger with Thought for Food. We've run out of time. I hope you've enjoyed it.